you think you can't go from politics to the divine,
agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, and welcome to Above the Fray. It's great to be back after Labor Day. My name is Carol Gold. Our number here is 914-803-4522. I think I forgot to set up a chat room for this show, so sorry, everybody. If I try to set it up now, there sometimes is a problem with the show's connection. So much for the chat room today. As I said, I'm glad to be here after Labor Day. Steve Clark will be with us shortly. He's in transit. But in the meantime, let me get to the show. I have a lot to say today. Yesterday, I watched the rally in Washington, D.C. that was in favor, well, not in favor. It was a rally to bring forward and stand in opposition to the downsides, which are mostly all of them, of the agreement with Iran that this administration has negotiated. And while I don't necessarily want to get to the merits of the agreement, maybe I will once Steve is on the show, what I really like to talk to you about are the speakers, because I watched the entire event, and there were a whole bunch of speakers. I mean, there were so many that they limited some of them to 2 minutes, and then they played music to get them off the air, because they off the podium. It was 95 degrees. Everybody was standing in direct sunlight in front of the Capitol building, no shade. It was really gruesome and hard on those people, I'm sure. And so everybody was limited. Some went longer than others. Senator Ted Cruz was the keynote, and he spoke for about 25 minutes. Donald Trump spoke. Sarah Palin spoke. Glenn Beck, a radio host, spoke. Several people spoke. And the two that I want to talk about, because I've written a blog post about it, it's posted at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com. It's the most recent post. And in fact, Steve posted also today, his is about Donald Trump. Mine happens to be about what I'm going to talk to you about now. I listened to Senator Cruz. As I said, he spoke for about 25 minutes, and he was quite eloquent. He was his usual factually correct lawyer self. He is, after all, a seasoned litigator, former head of the Justice Department for the state of Texas, former attorney general here, and has presented cases multiple times before the Supreme Court, actually won one against the Bush administration. And so he's always logical and prepared and has all of his ducks lined up, so to speak. And he presented a very eloquent and passionate and obviously heartfelt commitment and argument as to why that deal is a bad deal, both in the interest of the United States, in the interest of Israel, and in the interest of the peace of the world. Now, remember that Senator Cruz is running for the presidency. He hopes to be the Republican nomination, as does Donald Trump. Never once during Senator Cruz's speech did he refer to his campaign or his candidacy. He stuck to the issue at hand, and he, as I said, passionately and heartfelt, in a heartfelt manner, conveyed the strength of his position, which is the position of, last time I checked, 82 or 83% of the American public. They are against the deal. But the deal has a lot of angles as to why it's currently a viable deal and will be signed, most likely, by the president, and vetoed, rather, by the president if the Congress is able to override his veto, which it doesn't look like it will. But I digress here about the deal, which I can talk to you about at length in a little bit. Let me get back to the presenters yesterday, the speakers. After Senator Cruz, Donald Trump spoke. And while I want to give credit where credit is due, Donald Trump did reference the danger of the agreement. He also took not a small amount of his time to once again tell us how wonderful he is, tell us how he can do what no one else can do, tell us how the Trump presidency will make America great again. He was campaigning. He was stumping. He was stumping at an event that was of grave international concern, of grave security concern for the United States and obviously for our ally Israel, and an event that was single-minded of purpose. That's what he was doing there. And Senator Cruz had invited him to speak. And he used it, he, Donald Trump, used it to stump for himself. It never fails to amaze me that he can't control his ego. And while I know that the 30-some percent that now favor him as the Republican nominee, while I know they love his boldness and his success rate in business and his take no prisoners kind of language, and I want to put aside for a moment how absolutely condescending and cruel and unkind he can be to people, particularly women, when he chooses to be, and he chooses to be that way too often publicly, as he did today with Carly Fiorina. Again, get to that in a moment. But it never fails to amaze me that the 32% or so of Republicans, independents, and even some Democrats who now support his candidacy or his attempts to become the candidate, they are taken with theater and they are taken with show. And that's not to say there's no substance there. He's been a successful businessman. You can't argue with that. You might want to argue with his ethics. You might want to argue with the fact that he supports eminent domain, which is the taking of private property with no judicial process, which he has done on more than one occasion when he wanted to build and somebody owned land. It is a terrible concept, eminent domain, that historically was used by the government to take land from private citizens, but there's a precedent that allows a private citizen to take land from another private citizen, or at least a corporation to take land, and he has done that on more than one occasion, that they're taken with his braggadocio, they're taken with his language, and I don't understand how following 2008 and following 2012, when so many people now are willing to say that they were taken in by the bravado of Barack Obama. Now, I need to make a distinction because the obvious argument is that Barack Obama had no experience. He had no millions and billions that he had earned on his own. He held virtually no job other than 2 years in the Senate and as a community organizer before he became president of the United States. That is clearly something that proponents of Donald Trump can distinguish. They can say there's no comparison. This guy, Donald Trump, is a billionaire based on his own business dealings, and he does what he says. I'm not going to make that the issue. I can't take that away from Donald Trump, and I can't make Barack Obama what he wasn't. There is a vast difference in that regard. But that's not the regard we need to be concerned with. The problem that we're still making in our mindset as voters is we are still acting as if someone tells us something and we believe them and they are elected to high office that they will fix our problems. And that nothing could be further from the truth. Number one, no one individual can fix what's wrong with America. We've got serious cultural problems. We've got serious ethical problems. We've got serious moral problems. We've got serious corrupt government problems. No one person can fix that. That's number one. Number two, we have just experienced 8 years of an ever-increasing lawlessness among our president. He has ignored the Constitution. He has railroaded and, I believe, in some cases, blackmailed, and I believe this, because there's no other reason for the Republican leadership to be acting the way they are, which is kowtowing and absolutely bowing down to everything this administration wants, despite what it promised in the midterms, which is what got it the overwhelming landslide that it had in the 2010 midterm elections. Despite all of the 12 things they said they were going to do, they haven't done any, well, they've done half of one and none of the other 11. they've simply folded under whatever it is that Barack Obama is able to do, and it certainly isn't his gracefulness and his like for the Republican Party that has gotten them to behave this way. So my point is this. We've had, as I just said, 8 years of, well, a little less than 8 years. We've got 500 days left. 7.5 years of an increasingly lawless presidency. Now, we see a president that we currently have with a tremendous ego, who cannot take responsibility for anything that goes wrong and takes total credit for everything that goes right, that believes he's the smartest guy in the room, that believes everything he wants is absolutely the right thing, the best thing, and the only thing, and screw what everybody else wants, if you'll excuse my language. He has usurped power away from, and with cooperation, I guess they've let go of, congressional, constitutionally mandated power. So what does that mean? That means that he has set precedent for a command and conquer, so to speak, for an egotistical president who wants to disregard the laws and disregard precedent and disregard the Constitution, and proceed out of his own simple desire to do X, whatever X is, and the heck with the Congress, and the heck with the Constitution, and the heck with the constitutional republic in which we live. That precedent that he has set in office, the way the government is currently running, can be just as equally abused by a Republican as it's been by a Democrat. That's not, ego is not unique to party. First of all, you have to have an ego to even want that office. But the level of ego that tends to want that office, it's not very often that we get a president who is humble, who has a sense of humility and his own place in the arc of history. Donald Trump is exactly like Barack Obama in that regard. He is egomaniacal. He has hubris beyond belief. He believes that he is the word, first, last, and always, that his way is the only way, or you take the highway. That's the way it works. He steamrolls over opposition, and I believe he has that same dictatorial approach to governance, or will have, because he's had it unrestricted in his private life, meaning in his civil life, in his non-governmental life, in his capitalistic life. He's had it unfettered, unobstructed, unopposed, that Barack Obama has exhibited in the White House. And so the precedent is set now. The last thing we need is another bumper sticker egomaniac. So hope and change, and the seas will calm and part, whatever it was Obama said in his acceptance speech or in his nomination, whatever. I remember he had this speech where he basically, it was like some vague analogy to Moses parting the waters. He was going to calm the seas or whatever. It's not very different than let's make America great again, and I'm going to make Mexico pay for the wall. There is a hubris, as I said earlier. There is also a childlike naivete about dealing with foreign governments. And unless you want to be another Vladimir Putin, unless you want to be an aggressor and a manipulator and somebody who's simply going to take what he wants because he wants it, and the heck with the method because the means justifies the end, which is what Trump is capable of. You know, I remember when he was building Trump Tower. It was the site of the old Bomwit Teller building, which was a department store in Manhattan on, on Fifth Avenue. And over the entrance of Bomwit Teller was a very grand, magnificent Art Deco sculpture. I believe it was of a woman. might have been of a woman and the world, like kind of like an, I forget exactly what it was, but it was a beautiful Art Deco sculpture. And Trump wanted to move ahead with the building. And the point or the intention was to remove that sculpture and preserve it. Well, he didn't want to wait. He could have, but he didn't want to, so he demolished it. Kind of like ISIS and historical temples or Christian sites or whatever they don't like that's in their way. He just basically demolished history. Don't get crazy. I'm not comparing Donald Trump to ISIS. It's like people who get nuts when somebody says that, you know, the Ayatollah is like Hitler or whatever, and people say, don't, you know, the Hitler reference is over. I'm not, it's overreactive, it's grandiose. I'm not comparing him to ISIS. I'm only saying that when you have a huge ego, when there is no room in your own mindset for the possibility that you could be wrong, or that you should open yourself up to someone else's opinion, or that there might be a reason to exhibit patience and not destroy the temple or not destroy the sculpture. When there's no room for any of that, that's not who we need. That's not who we need. Yes, we need someone who is strong. Yes, we need someone who knows how to push. Yes, we need not someone who knows how to get things done. But we also need, because of our moral, our ethical decline, because of the corruption in government, we also need someone with ethics and morality and a sense of what a constitutional republic looks like and how the representatives in a constitutional government perform, how they act, how they respond to the desires of their constituents. It's also what we need. And Donald Trump doesn't have it. When you can be running for president of the United States and say that a woman who's also seeking the same nomination you are is too ugly to be president, which is what Donald Trump said today about Carly Fiorina, is despicable, it's inexcusable, but it's very telling. It's very telling. It lets us know who he really is, because unscripted, he says things that reveal to us who he really is. And you know, it's like people always say, you know, the Franklin Roosevelt, he was such a great president, and Eleanor Roosevelt, she's, you know, an icon, and for many women, or some at least, maybe not in this generation, in the young generation now, millennials, but in past generations, she's been sort of a role model. Well, Eleanor Roosevelt in private was a virulent anti-Semite for a good part of her life. She didn't want Jews in the White House because she didn't like the way they smelled. You know, so when you get to know who someone really is, then it's incumbent upon you to make your decisions based on fact and not on what you want them to be. Not who what you want them to be. You know, women, we know this really well, right? Women know this really well. We fall in love or we become attracted to men who have all kinds of qualities that need improvement, and we say, I'll change him, you know, because I know who he can be and I'll help him get there. No, people are who they are and they change of their own accord, or they don't. But other people don't get them to change simply because they want them to. Donald Trump is pretty cooked, right? He's a grown man. He's been a success. He has an empire. He has money to the point where he can fund his own campaign. He's not very humble. And we need humility because we're coming off of an arrogance that's almost unprecedented in my lifetime. I mean, Lyndon Johnson was obnoxious and he was crude and whatever, but the ego of Barack Obama, the way he talks down, the way he has divided the country, the way he condescends, and I realize it's just another way of saying talking down, but the way that he condescends, the way that he dismisses opposition, when it's always from your opposition that you can learn something. You know, I always say, I don't want to hear myself talk because I know what I'm going to say. I want to hear what other people have to say because that enlightens me. I never know where wisdom is coming from. Donald Trump doesn't strike me as someone who cares much where wisdom is coming from. Donald Trump strikes me as someone who believes he has all the wisdom. You know, when he was asked about the Bible or religion, I forget what the question was, but his response was just so ridiculous. He said, "Oh yeah, I have lots of Bibles. People send me Bibles all the time. I keep them in a special place, away from the city. I have a special place where I keep Bibles." It was the most ridiculous answer I ever heard, because number one, it's not like he's a minister and people send, who sends a businessman Bibles, lots of Bibles, especially someone who hasn't been in a house of worship in a very long time, as Trump admitted, and who couldn't quote or say one thing about the Bible that was a favorite for him or that he lived by, whatever. His answer to the whole religion question was that he has lots of Bibles and they're special, so he keeps them in a special place where nothing far, he can't even open one. They're far away from him. That's how much they mean to him. I'm not saying he has to be a Bible-toting, gun-toting, whatever people think conservatives are, if you in fact believe he's a conservative, but I am saying that I want someone humble enough to be able to acknowledge that there's a power greater than them. I've known people in my life personally who didn't believe in God. And I find that people who don't believe in a power greater than themselves often have difficulty believing in difficult times that there's a reason to have faith in humanity or in another person, and that you can get through difficult times if you believe there's a force greater than yourself, and that you and that other person or those other people can weather the storm, because ultimately there is goodness in the universe and it will help you through those rough times. I'm not saying that lets us shed responsibility for our own actions, but I'm uncomfortable, quite honestly, with people who have no connection to something greater than themselves. I don't care whether you call it a computer in the sky, as I often say, or whether it's God, or whether you believe in the Trinity and the Holy Spirit, or whether you believe in Allah. I don't know. I don't care who you believe in, as long as it's a God of love and a God of life and an entity of positivity. If you believe it's a computer in the sky, that's fine, as long as the computer in the sky created nature, and nature is a good thing that always moves toward the regeneration of life. I don't believe in anything that worships death, and I don't want to go off on a tangent because I could with this one, but let me just stick with Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. Today, after the event of yesterday, the rally, as I said, Donald Trump followed up that egotistical display with a despicable comment today about Carly Fiorina being too ugly to be president. This is a former CEO of Hewlett-Packard, a very bright, articulate, as far as I can determine, classy woman. What did Ted Cruz do today, in contrast to what Donald Trump did? Well, today, Ted Cruz composed a letter, had it delivered to Mitch McConnell, Majority Leader of the Senate, and to John Boehner, Speaker of the House of Representatives, and he outlined 3 points based on the Corbin Act that is the law that was passed that lays out the terms under which the Iranian agreement can go forward. And he laid out 3 legal points in that letter why the $1.5 billion with a B dollars that are frozen Iranian assets currently being held in banks throughout this country cannot, at this time, despite President Obama's intention on September 17th to sign the agreement, cannot be released under the agreement. And in a nutshell, the reason the funds can't be released is because the Corker Act says that once the president gives Congress the terms of the agreement, Congress has 60 days to vote on it. Otherwise, the president can go ahead and sign the agreement. Well, The 60 days were supposed to start ticking from when the president gave Congress the terms. The problem, it turns out, and by the way, September 17th is the 60th day. Congress, all of the agreement. Parts of it were withheld. And those parts that were withheld are critical because, number one, one of them allows Iran to do its own inspections. But let's put the content aside for the moment. I want to make my point before I run out of time. Today, the day after the rally, at which Ted Cruz put his ego aside and addressed the issue of the danger of the Iranian agreement pending to the world, at the same rally that Donald Trump stumped for himself, the next day, Donald Trump insulted, degraded, attempted to degrade another candidate because she isn't pretty enough for him. At the same time, Ted Cruz used today to continue to push under the legal restrictions as to why the Iranian deal can't go forward. So here's what I would say. I would say that the day after the rally and at the rally and the day after, Ted Cruz is acting presidential even before he would get the nomination. He's showing us who President Cruz would be. Likewise for Donald Trump. Donald Trump is telling us that he is egomaniacal, that he thinks nothing of slandering a woman in public for no good reason. I don't even know why he said that about Carly Fiorina. It didn't need to be said. It shouldn't have been said. It isn't true. And it seemed petty and petulant and infantile, or at the very best, adolescent. So I would urge my listeners, all of you, I urge you to think about and to tell your friends, and perhaps go to AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and read the blog post titled Acting President Cruz, which is the latest post today, and like it, share it on Facebook, tweet it, whatever, email it to your friends, because I think it's food for thought. If you want to make Donald Trump a public service servant, make him Secretary of Commerce. Because that's what he knows best. He knows business. He knows commerce. But he is not presidential material. And I would say to you that while there may be others in the Republican field who could be president, one person I am certain is presidential material is Ted Cruz. And that's because he's showing me now, simply in anticipation of the possibility that he would rise to the office, that he knows how to behave in the office, that he knows how to make his priorities consistent with what his constitutional duties are. That's the kind of man I want for president. It's the kind of woman I would want for president. And in Ted Cruz, I see that man. And he's going to stay in that number one position for me until I have reason to feel otherwise. I want to thank you. I'm sorry Steve never got on tonight's show, but hopefully you had enough content. And I always try to do my best. Thanks for listening. I'm Carol Gold. You've been listening to Above the Fray podcast, and Steve and I will be back here. I started to say next Monday night, but I won't be. It is Rosh Hashanah. It will be the second night of the Jewish New Year. So to my Jewish listeners, Happy New Year, Chag Sameach, and Lashana Tova. And to everyone else, have a wonderful weekend. And maybe Steve will be here Monday night, but for sure, we'll be back here again next Thursday. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Carol Gold. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark. From politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.